This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Had enough of those supplements that leave you feeling nothing? Symbionica is your solution to great-tasting, all-natural supplements that actually work. Crafted with premium plant-based ingredients, their products have no seed oils, fillers, or toxins. Try them out and actually feel the difference today. Visit Symbionica.com and use code IHEART for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Again, that's 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Go to Symbionica.com. C-Y-M-B-I-O. T-I-K-A.com.
Welcome to a special bonus episode of The Middle Podcast. I'm Jeremy Hobson, along here with Tolliver. Hey, Tolliver.
Hey, how you doing, Jeremy?
All right, so we knew all of our listeners wanted more Neil deGrasse Tyson after our latest show, so here he is again, but this time without the constraints of the FCC. If you want to swear Neil deGrasse Tyson, you can do that. You can do that now. He's the director of the Hayden Planetarium at the American Museum of Natural History and author of many books, including Starry Messenger, Cosmic Perspectives on Civilization. Neil deGrasse Tyson, thank you so much again for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I love the concept of the show. We need more of this.
Thank you so much. And I now get to ask you the real question, which is, has intelligent life ever made contact with Earth? Can you tell us the real truth there?
There's no evidence of that.
Okay.
So that's easy. Say yes or no. I can just say there's no evidence.
All right.
I spent a day embedded with folks who believe in UFOs out in Los Angeles. And we spent a day looking for these things. And every single time we had a telephoto lens, it was a balloon. So I'm just asking people, please hold on to your balloons because you're driving people crazy out here, you know?
All right. I mean, it could have been a Chinese spy balloon, too.
That could have been. You're right.
Let's go to the phones because we've got a lot of calls here. And Jesse is joining us from Maine. Jesse, welcome to The Middle. Go ahead with Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Hi, thanks. Yes, I can also confirm that the skies near Vinyl Haven are still beautiful. I'm a lobsterman out of Booth Bay Harbor, and we're frequently out there.
Wow.
And my question for science is we as fishermen are commonly referred to as science deniers, and we want to deny no windmills, no this, no that, the other thing. But I think I'd like to point out that we're really science demanders. You know, we get these data sets that then go to governance and go into our regulations. But the problem we have isn't science denial. We need to demand more of it. So how do we create an open platform science, and especially make it mandatory if it's going to go towards regulation and laws?
So in a democracy, if that's in fact what we live in, you would need to elect people who have a deeper care of the science that goes into the regulations. So if there's a mismatch between who's doing the regulating and you who are in the trenches, if I can call it that, you're out there with the fish, not swimming with the fish, that'd be a different fate. But if you're out there with the fish, then there's a disconnect. So you vote someone in who has the knowledge that's necessary, because at some point it's an elect, if they're an official, somewhere in there, somebody got elected, okay? So I know that sounds simpler than it often is, but that's really the solution. And by electing people who care about science, that completely transforms how decisions are made with regard to laws and legislation. And it's not based on someone's religion or their cultural background or their history. It's based on objective truths found by methods and tools of science. And objective truths apply to everyone, unlike your personal truths that could be, like I said, religious or cultural or otherwise. You also had a comment about the enterprise of science. It's always been true, the publisher perish, but publisher perish is not as bad as it sounds. Let me reword that. You ready? Work or lose your job? Okay. I could say this to any of you in your job. Are you going to work today? Well, no. Well, then you're not. Then you're fired. So this publisher perish, that's your job. Your job is to do, if you're a research scientist, that's your job. To be on the frontier. And if you're not on the frontier, then go home and make room for someone else who needs to be or wants to be or who already is. And so now there's a concern that you said pay to play, but there's some phrase you use there. Journals are now going into open model, is a term for it, open source journals, where no longer do you pay to have your article in a journal, that the journals are free, that libraries pay to subscribe to them, and then that pays for their production costs and the like. And so much of it is just digital these days rather than paper costs. So that's been removed. The bigger problem in science is the verification problem. If you come up with a result and people like the result, and then the journalists get a hold of it and say, this is true, and no one has verified it, it's not true yet scientifically. And what's odd is on the internet, you know what's irresistible? You're surfing the internet and there's a YouTube that comes up and a person says, the establishment thinks this is true. Well, the establishment will tell you, but I have the answer that they're trying to suppress. Boom, you're all in. It doesn't matter what the topic is, because this has sort of given mainstream science a bad name. The whole point of mainstream science is that stuff has been verified.
Right.
If you're a lone wolf, and you're saying you've got an answer that no one else has, the chances are you're wrong.
I think that Jesse got quite the answer there from you, Neil deGrasse Tyson.
I didn't get all emotional about it. Sorry. No.
I can see why he would be emotional about it too, as a lobsterman whose business depends on the science. And also I can see why you'd be emotional about it as well. Let's see.
By the way, I just made the connection. It's Maine and he's got lobsters.
Yeah.
I just got that.
Right.
I was a little slow on the uptake there.
All right, let's go to Hannah, who's in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Hannah, welcome to the middle. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm a big fan, and I know you've had a really great career, in academia and research, but also as a public figure. So I was wondering if you think that scientists can or should also kind of spread awareness about their fields through public awareness, kind of like you have.
Yeah, I can tell you there's a lot of nuances here, and let me sort of compress it so we can get even more questions in the short time that we have together. When you're formally trained as a scientist, nowhere in there is there any training to communicate, not verbally. Writing, yes, you have to be able to write, but that's most people can do that. There, and not only that, there's some percent of my colleagues who we now that we have neurodiverse vocabulary, some percent are on the autism spectrum, and we might have said Asperger's in a day, but I think that's been merged to the autism umbrella. And if that's what you are, you're perfectly happy in the lab, and you don't want to talk to anybody. So you shouldn't be forced to. So there's enough of us who have energy to do so that do so. I'm visible because I have like big platforms, but if you dig into...
Well, you're also visible because you are I am the stepchild of two physicists, and both of them have talked about you as a communicator that is very unusual in the scientific community. Scientists have scientist brains, and you have both.
Yeah, so, and I'm saying it's not, there's no force to nurture it on the route to the PhD, which is the entry gate to research science. So not only is it not nurtured, you can be a great scientist and have no social skills at all.
Right.
So that means this task, it would be unrealistic to require it of everyone. But I can tell you, if you search for science popularizers on YouTube, the list is growing. And I'm very happy to see that, because one day I'm going to like step out the back door when there's enough of everyone else on the landscape. And then you won't even miss me because everybody else is doing that. And it'll be the natural course of what you'd expect in all of the professions. If not by all the scientists, many of them.
Let's go to Isaac, who's in the Twin Cities in Minnesota. Isaac, welcome to the middle. Go ahead with Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Hi, thank you for having me. Kind of have an interesting question for you. So if you could solve one cosmic mystery with the snap of your fingers, which mystery would it be and why would you choose it? So basically, and also how would this resolution basically impact the understanding of the universe?
Yeah, that's a great question.
I love when people ask if you could solve one thing with the snap of your fingers. So yes, go ahead.
Okay, so I have a cop-out answer. I don't know if the caller will be happy with this answer, but it's the answer I'm giving you. You ready?
Yeah.
I remembered questions in graduate school, that if I only had the answer to this question, then everything would be solved. Then I realized when the answer to that question arrived, it led to other questions. It put me on a new vista where I could see farther than I could see before, and new questions then became important to me. So because of this life experience, no longer do I say, I just need the answer to this. That's all. I don't think that way. Because for me, it is the eternal arrival of questions after every new question that's answered that is the lifeblood of science. Now, there are questions I do have, and I don't know their answer. For example, are we smart enough to answer the questions that we've posed? Or, deeper still, are we smart enough to even know what questions to ask?
I'm guessing the answer is no.
I lay awake wondering whether the human mind, as proud of it as we are, is sufficient to completely understand the universe itself. So the question is, are we smart enough to understand the universe? If I get that answer and the answer is yes, then I'll go back like gangbusters and be fearless of the frontier, which I sort of already am, but I carry this suspicion that maybe something could be too hard for the limited brain wiring contained within humans. It might need some alien, who's 100 times smarter than us, to figure it all out.
Or a robot. What about a robot?
Well, if it's a robot that we built, if it's AI, here's the problem with AI. We humans build telescopes. AI doesn't build telescopes. All right. A human will pose a question, devise an experiment to solve, build the experiment and do it. So unless we have robots that can build apparatus, we don't really have them who can do that. Maybe that'll happen one day, but the actual moving of the frontier, I don't see that happening with either AI or robots in the foreseeable future. Mm-hmm. AI is very good at aping what we've already done and coming up with possibly new ways to do what we do, but to have a completely new thought, I don't know. For example, if you go up to AI and say, write me a play, you can say in the style of Shakespeare, but about my family. Okay, and you feed it stuff. So it might do that, all right? But if you say, write me a play in the style of someone who has never been born, it'll what?
Right.
Because there's no data. There's no place to mine on the internet to get information of someone who has never existed. So I still think humans have some value in the world.
I agree. I agree with that. Let's go to Jackson, who's in Tallahassee, Florida. Jackson, welcome to the middle. Go ahead with Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Hey, it's a huge honor to be talking to you. My question was, what's your opinion on the naming of things like telescopes or reactions or different phenomenon in terms of how those names are tied to their namesakes, like political or cultural beliefs, and how that like progresses with as culture and society changes?
Are you talking about telescopes specifically, or more broadly things in our society?
More broadly.
Okay, so there's an entire section of my book Starry Messenger, Cosmic Perspectives on Civilization. There's an entire section in there on the naming of things. It's in particular statues, right? After the George Floyd murder, there was a removal of many statues that at one time were revered and then not, right? So my daughter has offered her opinion on this, and I kind of agree. I just don't know how you would invoke it in practice. She said, don't name anything after anybody. Why would you ever have to do that? Come up with some other clever name, especially in modern times where we know everything about everybody. Okay? And so the concept of a hero, which is only the most perfect ethereal elements of a human being, it in an era before the internet, that was possible. Post in an internet world where all your pictures, all your pictures when you were drunk at the party that's online, and now you're running for office. Not that that would be discounting today, but there was a day when that would have been damning. Not anymore. So social cultural mores shift, yes, but our access to information about a person is so thorough that no longer, I don't think, can we just revere people the way we once did and build statues to them.
What about planets? Because don't they name like these far off planets after people too?
Okay, so let's get astronomical. So yeah. The planets are named after Roman gods, and their moons are named after Greek characters in the life of the Greek counterpart to that Roman god. So that's the Greek and Roman sort of tracking of our philosophies and our science. 2/3 of all stars in the night sky that have names have Arabic names. And these come from the Arabic culture from 1,000 years ago, the golden age of Islam. So now we have the Islamic cultures, the Arabic culture. What was not represented there is Asian cultures, so India, China, nor Aboriginal Australia, nor First Peoples in the Americas. Those are not represented in the official naming of things. And that has to do with influence over who had the power to name things. So, but most of that is mythical, magical things. And so you're not going to later find out that Zeus did something bad and you want to rename Jupiter, right? That's not going to, we're not headed in that direction. The interloper to the solar system, the first of its kind, it was a comet object that came from interstellar space. It was named Oumuamua, which is Hawaiian for first scout. That object was discovered using telescopes in Hawaii. So they figured, let's name that and keep in the culture of the region. We've always done that, even if imperfectly. And I've been proud of my field for at least attempting that.
But by the way, you're talking about different ethnicities, different places around the world, different kinds of people and things getting named after them. You bring up something really interesting in your book that I hadn't thought very much about. But it's that, you know, when you go up to somebody and you say, where are you from? And they say, well, I'm from Brooklyn. And it's like, well, where are your parents from? And they're from Italy. And you say, you know, we like to pick the place that makes the most sense for us, that we like the most, to say where we're from.
It's quite arbitrary, right?
It's very arbitrary. So we're all from the same place. Right.
Yeah, let me just re-say what you just said, because you mixed two of them.
Because I did a bad job of it.
You say, only in America do you say, what are you, right? So you say, what are you? Oh, I'm Italian. They say, well, where were you born? I said, Brooklyn. Where were your parents born? Brooklyn. Where were their parents born? Italy. So I'm Italian, right? Well, that's kind of, why doesn't he just say American? But he doesn't. He goes back to a point where he wants to establish a flag plant and establish a bit of pride. Another person did the same exercise. They said, we're Swedish. I said, where were you born? In New York City. Well, where were your parents born? In Minnesota. Where were their parents born? Minnesota. Where were their parents born? Sweden. So I'm Swedish. Okay. So right. They went to the point where they wanted to display this for the person asking the question. And I say, well, why stop there? Why not just keep going back?
Yeah.
And by the way, if you did that, you know where you land? Africa. So on that level, we're all African. And who you're declaring is your family is an arbitrary cutoff point in your ancestral tree, to the point where you have a sense of comfort and pride in where you have planted your flag. But you should be self-aware that it's arbitrary.
We'll be right back with more of your calls coming up on The Middle.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200K for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does the hard parts for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billings, scheduling, and more. With a home management team that provides support before, during, and after your stay so you can focus on the relaxing, hosting, and making memories with family and friends. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. With Picasso, you can stop saying someday and start building family traditions today in a vacation home you own and revisit time after time. Visit Picasso.com today to see thousands of luxury vacation home listings. That's Pacaso.com.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
This is The Middle. I'm Jeremy Hobson. If you're just tuning in, The Middle is a national call-in show. We're focused on elevating voices from the middle, geographically, politically, and philosophically, or maybe you just want to meet in the middle. Two more calls I want to get to. One is Tyler in St. Louis. Tyler, go ahead with Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Hey, Neil. Just wanted to ask, where does the energy come from to make virtual particles? And as a bonus question, is that still the current knowledge for Hawking radiation and why black holes get smaller?
Yes, that's to the second question. the first question, in the vacuum of space, we learned from quantum physics that there's no such thing as zero energy, that fluctuations, quantum fluctuations, will always manifest as a tiny amount of energy in the vacuum. We call it vacuum energy. It's its own entry in the wiki page, the vacuum energy. It's out of that energy that virtual particles come into and out of existence. And my favorite new understanding of virtual particles, and I got this from, I had lunch with Brian Greene, a friend and colleague up at Columbia, a physicist, string theorist, wrote the best-selling book, The Elegant Universe. He alerted me that recent research on virtual particles, these are particles that pop into existence and then they find each other again and disappear. So they have these loops in time. And if one of these virtual particles forms outside the boundary of a black hole, you could possibly lose one inside the black hole and the other goes the other direction. And the black hole effectively evaporates this way. All right, so these two particles are entangled. They're quantum entangled. And he was suggesting through the work of others that that entanglement might be mini wormholes that connect the virtual particle, that connect any two virtual particles, but the vacuum of space is teeming with them. And it might be that these wormholes between virtual particles is the actual thread of the fabric of space-time. And that blew my mind.
Tyler, does that answer your question?
Oh, totally. Thank you. I got a bunch to look up now.
Yes, definitely. Go for it.
Thank you, Tyler. And let's go to Sam, who's in Minnesota. Sam, welcome to the middle. Go ahead with Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Holy. I'm talking to Neil deGrasse Tyson. That's insane. My question is, I'm a social scientist. I study sociology and psychology here at the University of Minnesota. And how can we integrate? How can we work together? How can we, the hard sciences and the social sciences, work for the betterment of our society? More than once, when I tell people I'm a psychologist and I do research, or I'm a scientist, people say, like, well, what do you know about math? Well, what do you know about chemistry? And where's your lab coat? And it's always hard for people to get the idea that both are, at least my understanding, they're both linked together so importantly. More than once, I have to use my sociological brain and say, I understand that this particular psychological experiment gave this results, but you also have to take into account the societal background of the individual. Like IQ tests, yeah, the math might be okay, and a particular sector of the population gets always a good test grade, but you also have to know the background of why this particular sector of the population has that better grade. So how can we work together?
By the way, I have deep respect for sociologists. My father was a sociologist who was active in the civil rights movement, worked under Mayor Lindsay in New York City. So he was a practical sociologist. He applied his formal knowledge to try to solve urban problems in the 1960s and 1970s. So I think deeply about sociology. I would, in fact, my book that is the intermittent subject of this conversation is dedicated to my father. And because so much of the book is sociologically infused. So I invite you, by proxy through my father's influence on me, to you, to have a look at the ways I have blended the methods and tools of the physical sciences, as well as a cosmic perspective, onto social cultural problems that we confront. And some of them are not simply, are you right or wrong? It's, have you really thought it through? I'll give a very fast example. It's not sociology as much as, this will appear in a different chapter, but it's related. You get a person who's a vegetarian because they don't want to kill animals. So let's take that person for an example. And they might have a humane mouse trap in their basement. Mm. Okay. And so they trap the mouse. And you got to check on it often because they'll dry up real fast if you don't, you know, you got to like, okay. So there they are. And then you'll release them into the wild and you'll feel good about yourself because you don't want to kill an animal. I don't have a problem with that, but I want you to understand completely what's going on there. What's going on is you took a mouse from your basement and put it into the wild where its life expectancy is between 6 months or a year. Half of all those mice are eaten within a year. They make tasty snacks for owls and hawks. And if you live in a home that mice get in, there are these things that eat mice that are out there in the wilds of your backyards. So whereas if you really care about the life of the mouse, you should leave it in your basement. There, it could live 4, 5, 6 years. And so,
But you don't want a mouse in your basement. You're scared of mice.
So I don't mind you saying you care about animal life, but don't now turn around and commit the life of a mouse to the belly of an owl when you could have actually cared for the mouse and have it live it and die a natural death rather than being eaten, death of old age, that is. So that's just an example of, I want people to just fully think things through. And when you do, typically it softens the strength with which you held the view.
Since we're thinking things through, I just finally want to ask you, Neil deGrasse Tyson, because I'm sure our listeners will be very interested in hearing this, and I know you've been thinking about it, is predictions for the year 2050. What are a couple of predictions that you have?
There's a whole chapter where I chronicle advances in civilization brought about by science and technology in 30-year increments from 1870 up through 2020. And I assert and defend in the text that at the end of each of those 30-year periods, they're unrecognizable to anyone from 30 years earlier. Basically unrecognizable. for example, 1900 to 1930. Well, in 1900, everyone was getting around on horses. In 1930, you couldn't give away a horse. And we had fought an entire world war and had a pandemic that killed 50 million people. And I also have famous bad predictions that people make. They have no capacity to make the giant conceptual leaps that are required. And a good example, let's go back to the 1990s. That's 30 years ago from the 2020s. In 1993, AT&T had a TV ad where they're talking about the future. And they got a lot right. Have you ever da-da-da-da-da? Well, you will, and AT&T will bring it to you. Well, one of them was they had someone doing something that I've never dreamt of doing, never did do, never want to do, never will do.
Okay?
And there's someone on a beach chair, and he's got a tablet, and he's typing away on the tablet, and he hits the tablet, and he said, have you ever wanted to send a fax from the beach? Well, you will, and AT&T will bring it for you. So they had no idea that 30 years from 1993, no one is sending faxes. We tend to think linearly. So we've now asked, if I want to go 30 years into the future, I thought I should put out my own predictions because I was making fun of other people's predictions. So I should have predictions so that other people can make fun of mine when the year 2050 comes. So one of them is psychology will be rendered obsolete by advances in neuroscience. Where we understand the mind so well, you just go in there and nip-tuck and change the chemistry. And whatever is the thing that you spent 100 hours on a psychologist's couch to get resolved gets done in one office visit. And by the way, you can then treat everyone in the mental hospitals this way. They would be treated and back to what we call normal. But you have to be careful what normal is, all right? Maybe someone is different and that's cool, as long as they're not harming someone. So that's one prediction I have. And another one is all cars will be autonomous self-driving by 2050. And that's not even a stretch to make that prediction. Because like I said, we went from 1900, where everybody had horses, to forget 1930, 1915, where you couldn't give away a horse. The only horses left were pulling tractors in farms. In cities, you couldn't find horses anymore. We built civilization on the literal and figurative backs of horses for thousands of years. And within one 10-year span, 15-year span, they were gone, replaced by automobiles. And so if we can replace horses with automobiles, then we can replace automobiles with automobiles. Ones that you drive versus one that's driven by a computer that is never drunk, that is never too sleepy, that doesn't need a cup of coffee. And in fact, if it wanted to, it could probably text and drive at the same time. They can go 90 miles an hour, two car lengths behind the car in front of it. Yeah. And they can have way better reflexes than you do. They can stop on a dime. They can talk to other cars when they want to change lanes. Those cars will separate, give them room to get in. And automobile deaths in the country will drop from 35,000 to zero. I predict that in the year 2050. And if you really want to drive a car, there'll be car parks, okay? Like today, if you want to ride a horse, you go to a stables and you can ride a horse. Mm-hmm. Then we'll have these tracks where you can physically drive a car.
Bumper cars.
Is what you need to
there
do.
We go, yeah.
Right. Actually, no, I was just going to say, you know, speaking of bumper cars, that as you're talking about how things change every 30 years, have you ever, I don't know if you've ever been to Disney World, but there's a ride there that I've been one time and I went on something called the Carousel of Progress, which was created by Walt Disney. And it's like it's a long running animatronic stage show where they show you 30 years now, 30 years later, 30 years. Look,
you're on
we
a
have
moving
an ice
vessel,
box.
Right?
Right.
As you
right.
go from diorama to diorama.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Right. Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. Well, Neil deGrasse Tyson, thank you so much for joining us for this special podcast extra of The Middle.
I'm glad we could take those few extra questions. Thanks for keeping me on for that.
Me too. And Tolliver, what is on tap for next week on the show?
For next week's show, it's all about the money. Specifically, are you saving money for your future? No. You can call us at 844-MIDDLE. That's 844-464-3353. Or write in at listentothemiddle.com. And while you're there, sign up for our weekly newsletter.
And by the way, I said next week. It's actually not next week anymore because this is a special podcast bonus. It's only in just a few days from now that'll be there. The Middle is brought to you by Long Nook Media, distributed by Illinois Public Media in Urbana, Illinois, and produced by Joanne Jennings, Harrison Patino, John Barth, and Danny Alexander. Our technical director this week is Steve Mork. Thanks to Nashville Public Radio, iHeartMedia, and the more than 400 public radio stations making it possible for people across the country to listen to The Middle. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Jeremy Hobson, and I'll talk to you soon.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Tired of restless nights? At Leesa, we know good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. From memory foam mattresses to hybrids that keep you cool all night long, Leesa's mattresses offer exceptional comfort and support with free delivery and 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to leesa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. Exclusions apply. See leesa.com for more details.